Mr. Sullivan.
Yes, Mr. Jackson. How much further into Cloudlandia are you?
I am all the way in. I'm telling you, this week has been an amazing discovery week for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know, I get, I don't know whether these revelations that I'm seeing are like just so clearly obvious or whether they seem profound to me at the deeper I dig into them, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, I think we're even underestimating the impact of what this full embrace of Cloudlandia will mean to us as early adopters, early settlers of Cloudlandia, and for society, you know, the world is going to change. I still have not gotten a chance to read the Disunited Nations book that I know you're, and I think that you know you're seeing this on a global scale. How all of this is going to really shape things. But I think an intersection of that and Cloudlandia making a lot of that possible.
Yeah, probably. Well, I think there's definitely some things happening in the news that correspond to the geopolitical, like the big scene that Peter Zion is the best. For those who are not familiar, Peter Zion, it's pronounced like Zion National Park, but it's spelled Z-E-I-H-A-N, and he's got three books out, and they're continuations of each other, so it's best to get the latest one, which is called Disunited Nations. And he just describes what happens in the world when the U.S. decides that it doesn't want to provide adult supervision to the whole world, but it's just picking its spots now. And the I don't know if you saw it on the news, but this agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates is a huge thing. Well, they just agreed, you know, we're just going to be friends and we're going to be normal countries to each other. And it's huge. I mean, it's just really huge. And then right away, others are saying, well, we really approve of this, you know, in the neighborhood. Well, you know, the goal for
so Israel
the last
has,
70
has
years
aligned.
Or so is to destroy Israel and drive Israel into the sea. But, you know, the lesser countries in the Middle East, you know, these are not big countries, are deciding we better get on the right side of what's happening in the world right now. And so we better make friends with Israel so that we stay friends with the United States. And so there's a shifting going on. And it all has to do with the fact that America may decide at a certain point just not to decide send one of their aircraft carrier groups and settle things down in the Middle East, but let all hell break loose.
Right.
Because we don't need the oil.
Right.
We don't need the oil. You know, we don't, there's nothing from the Middle East that we really need. I'm talking from an American standpoint here. And well, they have to stay here because of the oil. Well, they don't need to stay here because of the oil. And it's just like a factor. And that's the only thing that's, it's kind of like the last thing that's been holding everything together is, well, the U.S. has to be involved everywhere because of the energy. And, you know, they've solved the energy problem. The U.S. can produce more energy than they actually need. And
yes.
And it's safe.
Yep.
You know, it's not threatened by any war. It's not threatened by any invasion. And it can go on producing and producing and producing. And I look at it. I just pick up little facts. The other thing is the rapid movement of people out of big cities. New York has had a movement out of 420,000 people since March 1st. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good size.
Pretty amazing.
City.
I didn't know that.
That's a good size small city.
Yeah.
And they're not moving out to come back. They're moving out to find new places to live.
Yeah, that's really, it's funny, but that reminds me of...
A place like Winter Haven looks really good.
It really does. It's fantastic. In 1993-ish, one of the things that I did, one of the last things I did before I teamed up with Joe Stump to do Buyer for Lonely, in my real estate business, I created a guide called Toronto and Beyond. And it was 40 great places to live within an hour of the city. And, mm-hmm. Because back then, the only way you could get information about Halton Hills or any of the communities, which you had to actually go there because there was no internet. So you had to come out and explore mm-hmm. to find it, right? So having these guides that gave people a snapshot of what you could get for your money was a big thing for people. So at least they got in the right direction. And now we're revisiting and reviving that. I'm working with a group in New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey mm-hmm. to create the Beyond Manhattan project, where we're doing, we've got identified 100 great places to live within 90 minutes of Manhattan. And that's so we're deep in the mm-hmm. production of that right now. But that you're right. We've got a syndicate of agents representing all these regions kind of thing, but create some collective cooperation among them. And of course it's all digital now, which is the greatest thing. I've been meeting with the team. We held gather everybody kind of in mm-hmm. one place by Zoom. And so we had our kickoff, a couple of months ago with this. And, I was thinking back to when I was launching Toronto and Beyond, and it was, we had to get people in a room to come and talk about it. And we'd all, had all the 40 agents all gather for a summit to get the, talk about our plans, and we would meet quarterly there. But now to be able to instantly gather up all of these people and do it through Zoom, transporting them right here.
Well, it was interesting because I go on the internet to find things.
Yes.
I didn't know. I was watching Scott Adams this morning
did you have your simultaneous sip?
I don't, I'm hours ahead of him. So I have my sip much earlier than he does.
Asynchronous sip. Yeah.
But it wasn't him, I watched him for a few minutes and he lists everything he's going to talk about. And I got the general drift from about 5 or 10 minutes. But then I was looking along the side at all the YouTube items, because down the right-hand side of the page, there's about an endless number of YouTube things. And there was one there on flying boat airplanes. Where have all the flying boat airplanes gone? Because from around 1935, maybe 1930 to 1950, that's the way you cross the ocean. If you were flying, you would take a China clip, you would take the boat, and they would leave New York, and you'd fly to Bermuda, and then you would, they would refuel, and people could stay the night, and then they would fly, to England, or they'd fly to Spain or France or whatever it was. And So when the war was over, the big thing was that line boats were actually very efficient because very few cities had airports. Mm-hmm. You know, like it hadn't become a big enough thing with airports that you would have a big airport that was near a city. Uh-huh. And so a flying boat could come right into New York Harbor. They could, right. You know, they could land and then they could just taxi and come right into New York Harbor. And it was just like a, you know, it was like a ocean liner and, you know, people would get off. And but they were planning one, this company in England called Saunders, and it would carry 100 people and they would have like lounges and you could, you know, in certain classes, you could sleep overnight. They had restaurants. You could go to restaurants. It was like a hotel.
And, wow. So and they would fly?
Huh? Oh,
and
yeah.
And they would fly? Wow.
And it would fly at roughly 400 miles an hour, you know. So it had really good speed. It had really good speed. And it was made. And it actually flew. And it was great and everything else. But they had forgotten that World War II had created all these airports close to cities. Uh-huh. And the jet, you know, the jet engine had been created right at the end of World War II, 1945. So we're talking 5 years. And then there were jet fighters. And the very first airliner that was really popular was the de Havilland Comet. It was a British, mm-hmm. a British airliner,
and yes.
British Airlines said, "No, we're going with jets." So and that was it. They missed, you know, but it was beautiful. It was beautiful, and but nobody wanted to buy it. It was very expensive. The Saunders, this thing, but it was actually created, and they mothballed it, and. Then at a certain point, they said, "What are we saving this thing for?" And they tore it apart. They should have actually kept it. Would have made a nice, you know, would have made a nice houseboat.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah. You know, it could have been a museum, a houseboat. You could have had restaurants and everything else. But, you know, it had passed its time. And then, but Saunders didn't quit, even though they couldn't sell that one. Still, in 6 years later, they were planning a 1,000-person flying boat, you know, which would have jet engines. It would have 20 jet engines, and
wow,
the crew could walk around inside the wings and everything like that, you know. But it was kind of like doubling down on a bad bet. You know, it was, and I think that a lot about the talk about cities over the last 10, 15 years has been kind of doubling down on a bad bet, you know. Certain aspects of city life have just really been doubling down on a bad bet.
I wonder about the, yeah, because the density, certainly, you know, the
well, you know where we live. We've got we're kind of the closest beyond Toronto that you can have in Toronto.
That's right. Yeah, you were that the beach is one of the
seaside town.
Yeah, you know, which really, I love.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah, Thomas. Thomas Cook was our agent for the beaches then.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas and Sally Cook. Yeah. But that was one of the areas for sure. And then you kept going, you know, all around the perimeter and to the Scarborough and to everything
but
else.
But especially north Hocking Valley, you know, Georgetown.
Yeah. We went all the way from Hamilton to Pickering to Barrie in the north. Yeah, so it was a nice thing. But yeah. I have never heard at all of these flying boats. I'm going to have to look this up because is that – and then there were – what was the Hindenburg? What were those Zeppelins? Is that what they were?
Yeah, well, they were – that pretty well ended probably – 1934, 1935, because they were made out of hydrogen and the Hindenburg, and it's like a bomb.
Yeah, but apparently they were pretty luxurious the way
they were luxurious, but they couldn't carry it. I mean, they had no carrying capacity. They, I think at most they had 35 passengers. You were paying, you were paying a fortune to fly on those things, and but there's still people today. We're going to bring back, we figured it out now, and people are really going to love this. And, it kind of went 100 miles an hour at maximum. Well, that's not a solution. That's not
right.
A solution. So I was just thinking through our, you and I were both at Genius Network on Thursday and Friday. I was just thinking, because I kind of think in book titles, because I'm right at it all the time of pumping out little books. And I was thinking, the title is sort of Living Local, Reaching Global, that all of us can live local and reach global now.
Yeah.
Because of Zoom.
Yeah. Now this is interesting that that reminds me of there was a book called The One-to-One Future that came out in 1995.
I remember that. Yeah. I read that book.
And, then it was very futuristic. It was very difficult to kind of imagine. It was at the beginning of somebody
about
saying...
93, actually. I was reading it on the way home from a trip to Amelia Island. You know Amelia Island?
Yeah, in Florida.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. I went there for a conference, and I had the book, and I was reading it on the way home from... Jacksonville. I flew home from Jacksonville.
Yeah, right.
Pittsburgh, and then Pittsburgh to Toronto,
Nice. Well, there's that thought, living local, think global. I don't know who presented that idea, but the first person I heard that from might have been Tom Peters. But I don't know who coined that of the... the thing, but these guys, Don Peppers and Martha Rogers, that's who wrote The One-to-One Future. They were like far visionaries where they're seeing something and they see how this is going to play out. Kind of like Peter Zion is a far geopolitical visionary, I think, seeing beyond the immediate future. And so you just prompted me to think, go back to my bookshelf here now and look at the books from 25 years ago with the far visionaries. I'm thinking about Faith Popcorn and looking what they were predicting when they were first coming out as futurists to see really how much of that is now completely manifested, But I'm just looking at the idea here that we're not, I'm almost like in awe at how much things have changed here. The implications of all the things that we have available to us. If I kind of overlay this thought of vision, capability, and reach over our opportunities in Cloudlandia, how we organize ourselves, the things, vision, capabilities, and reach that vision is a multiplier. Vision is something that is, that you can kind of, shapeshift or asynchronous.
It's in short supply,
That's true.
It's the trigger. You either have capability and reach or you don't. And the only thing that determines whether you have capability and reach is whether you have vision in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that
because you wouldn't see the capability and you wouldn't see the reach if you didn't have vision.
And that's exactly it. But I think being exposed, when you have vision and you are exposed to these capabilities, the things that that creates now are amazing, right? It's funny, yeah. Dan. You know, I thought about how we've talked about my, you know, third grade teacher, Mrs. Jefferson, with the, mm-hmm. you know, Dean is able to achieve excellent results with what seems like little effort. Imagine if he applied himself. And I thought to myself, we were kind of kidding around one day that would be a great book title, right? Like, imagine if you applied yourself. But then here's the thing.
Different, uh-huh. but kind of probably coming from the same point of judgment, has no respect for authority.
Yes. right. But I love that.
You know, and what I will give them credit for, they were doing this on intuition because they didn't really have any evidence to present to the court that I was being disrespectful or I was being disobedient. They were just picking up something.
Yeah.
And so, I'm trying to think back. What did I ever do to give off those vibes?
Uh-huh. Well, skipping school and going to the library would probably be one of them.
That would be one.
Yeah. That's funny. The clues were there. So in our, well, we were at Genius Network on yesterday Thursday and Friday. I had, over that 2 days, I had a vision for the book title, Revision. And I thought, you know, imagine if you applied yourself, but then we scratch out the applied yourself and put stopped trying, did only the things you love and still get everything you want.
Yeah.
That's really the, that's really where we are right now.
Here's the thing, you know, I always, and I'm looking back because we've been, you know, from our client base, strategic coach client base, we've been, you know, really powerfully complimented by our client base on how quickly we adjusted and, you know, and we were right back in action and everything else. And I said, you know, it's actually just, what were you doing over the previous 20 years? What were you doing over the previous 25 years? What you did over the last 5 months is really a result of what you did over the last 25 years. In other words, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. What were your mindsets? You know, what kind of future were you seeing beyond the present you were in?
Yeah.
And my sense is that people who respond very, very quickly, they had already prepared themselves for the event. They had already prepared themselves for the changed circumstance. I didn't feel like I went through any big change, you know. Mm-hmm. I still don't. It'll be 6 months in a couple of weeks, you know. It'll be 6 months that we've been at this. And I don't remember feeling, I don't really feel that, wow, I'm really going to have to change my mind here. I'm really going to can't look at things this way or anything. I don't remember going through anything like that over the last, 6 months.
No, I get it. I mean, the good news is that it was really just a delivery device, right? For what you were, you know, distributing.
No, I mean, what happened for both of us is the rest of the world woke up and acquired a capability.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. I think that's great. I rediscovered something that you're talking about, all these capabilities that I think Peter Diamandis first introduced me to. It was the MarTech 5000. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So somebody has taken on themselves to be the sort of indexer of all the marketing technology services and software and things that are available for us now. And he's been tracking it kind of since 2013 or something, when there were 794 entries on the thing. And it's over now, there's over 8,000 different services, you know, that
there's
are
like SaaS.
Yes, exactly. These are SaaS, or
artificial.
Yeah, it could be artificial intelligence, could be a service, could be, you know, done for you things. Like, capabilities is really the best way to look at it, that it's a capability that you can tap into. Or like when they were talking about in China, that market for the components, where you can go and put all the components together for any electronics or things that you're looking for. So I look at they're creating this, and they've got a really amazing cloud that shows the different categories of the things. Like, if you think about SEO as one thing, search engine optimization, they're all categorized that there's, you know, dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of companies that are serving that SEO area. Content, there's, you know, all these writing services and everything like that. And I start to see now that what, as far as the capability front goes, when we look at the vision, capability, reach, that all of those would fit in your capability stack. If we take a Scott Adams, term kind of thing, it's your stack of capabilities. And all of them, what I'm noticing as a pattern is that you're as needed, as much as you needed, as much as you need, for only what you need is the thing that we're doing. And they're driving out inefficiencies. Like, there's several services right now where you can get, let's say, graphic design as an example. There's, what Roland was talking about, No Limit Creative.
Well, that magic thing, fascinated me, the number, you know, he had 16, and he said, I got one I really want to take you through. And that is really a thing that, it's an artificial intelligence program that just will, keep telling you exactly what images are working, what copies working.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then so those things, but as far as the creation of stuff, even, you know, like now, like design, for instance, the latest infinitely scalable thing is our services like Design Pickle, and others, where you subscribe to this service and you can have unlimited requests, but they do one design at a time for you. So essentially, you stack up your design queue in the in the thing, and you're paying, you know, a fraction of what you would pay to have an in-house designer.
Well, this is taking place in the real estate next to the Zoom transportation system. So
yeah, tell me what's happening.
Don't look at Zoom as a communication system. Look at it as a transportation system.
Yeah.
And then there's real estate next to the transportation system, and all the SaaS services that you're talking about. Seems to me, well, these are the general store, and these are all the businesses that are building up. Because if you didn't have global reach, your need for these capabilities wouldn't be as high.
Right.
But if you have global reach, you have a global transportation system, then there's a lot of things that, there's a lot of who capabilities in the form of individuals, obviously, that you're looking for, but also who in the form of software, in the form
yes.
artificial intelligence. And so that's the new system, you know, that is a new person in Free Zone in the last 4 or 5 months. Let me just go through my Rolodex here. I just have to remember exactly, you know, what he does. But he has real estate, and he finds commercial real estate. So this is these would be like industrial park, you know, industrial park real estate. Mm-hmm. You know, where you'd have maybe 50,000 to 80,000 square foot. And then you can subdivide the space.
Yes.
And what he does, he finds it, and it's not well packaged and everything, and he'll buy it. And then he's got a makeover process where he really, you know, freshens everything up, puts in landscaping, puts in proper security, parking lots and everything like that. And then he, you know, he's got investors, and then mm-hmm. he's got tenants. He's got investors and tenants, and he's, you know, he's doing one of these a quarter for 25 years.
Wow.
He'll invest. And I was telling him, you know, to read the Peter Zion book, because it tells me that from an actual real estate, I'm talking, you know, mainland real estate.
Yeah.
The best place is between the Allegheny Mountains and the Rocky Mountains in the USA for a flood of reasons. One, they got the unlimited energy access with pipelines. They've got the best river system in the world.
Yeah.
The Mississippi Valley River system has 87 rivers all flowing towards the Mississippi. In other words, if you're on the Missouri River, you're on the other river, they all flow into the Mississippi, which flows into the Gulf of Mexico, which flows to the world. And I said, you know, what you should think about now is that whole territory, because he was in Oregon and he was thinking, well, we'll go to Idaho, you know, we'll go to Washington, and we'll go to California, we'll go to, you know. And I said, well, you can go much wider now that you have Zoom, because uh-huh. you can get everybody, you can have instant transportation. But I said, start looking at where you have the interstate highway system with an interchange. Look at, see if they're a port city, a river port city, and see if they have a private jet airport. Because if it's a private jet airport, that's, you know, it's good enough for everything. So you got all the transportation system, but the land is cheap. The living is good.
Yeah.
And I said, that's what you should think about. I mean, it really made a big, made a big difference for him to think in those terms. Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. Yeah. That whole geography now, there's a great, you know, opportunities for geographic arbitrage, because there's so the differences in square footage that you can get in, you know, the big cities compared to what you could get there. Where,
yeah, I mean, it's certainly true residentially. I mean, that's why, you know, that's been your forte for the last 25 years. But the residentially, but it's also true commercially, because there's some businesses. You know, that can be, incredibly viable. But here's the thing that I was reading all the, you know, Richard Florida. I don't know if you read any of his books. You know, he was talking about the rise of the creative class. And that was all density living. It was all density living, you know, that all these young creative class people, you know, are going to be in the intense city, and they'll put up with 400 square foot condos, and you know, and they're living in dorms. I mean, they're just graduate students who, instead of going to class, they're going to a job. But it's just his image of the creative class was just that the, you know, they look the same. They still have their backpack.
Yeah.
You know, they're living in a tiny, tiny condo rather than in a tiny dorm room, and they're eating at brew pubs instead of at the cafeteria. And,
right.
But they don't own any. They don't own anything. They don't have cars. They don't have kids. They don't have anything. I said, that's not the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you? Because that's WeWork. That was what they were building on. Was the dream of that everybody would want to be just the space they need or whatever, but be around in high density like that.
Yeah. And but actually, my density has gone up in terms of reach since March 1st. You know,
sure, I mean, of course.
I'm communicating with far more people on a daily, weekly basis now with Zoom than I ever did physically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my density has gone way up.
Yeah. Boy, I'm not even sure that we really understand like what this is going to. What the full,
being a red, white, and blue American, there's two things that I always believe that in their dreams, Americans really like real estate and they like driving around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true, right? That's so funny. They like dreams and they like or real estate. They like driving around. That's great.
No, I mean, isn't it true, though? I mean, aren't you, don't you have real estate and you're driving around from time to time?
Yeah, I would say less driving around now, but yes, certainly.
But anytime you want without any, without any trouble. Yeah, and everything like that. And my sense is that, if I can give you an insight on the riots that are taking place in all the major cities. This group of people were told that they were the future.
Mm-hmm.
They were told that they were the future, and they were charged extortionary amounts of money to go to university.
Mm.
Because you're the future. You're the future. And they get out, and my sense in the last 6 months, basically, the world doesn't care about them anymore. And I think they were just really pissed off. And they were saying, we just got screwed. We'll never get out of debt. We're not the stars. Let's go burn something down.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that, it's on a corollary. I think then you've got the other end of this, too, where... I'm just thinking about that. My neighbor, I ran into one of my neighbors a couple of days ago. Yeah, imagine that.
How'd that happen?
Exactly. And he is a...
Don't you check before you go out, Dean?
That's right, exactly. So he is a former... he was a judge and was just... this year retired, but at forced retirement at 70 years old. And I thought, man, that's really like, he's young, he's act, he's healthy, he's fit. He's, the whole thing, but in the court, system or whatever he's in, it's mandatory retirement at 70.
Yeah. Is this and, a county judge? Or,
he's a county judge. Yeah. Yes.
So he's an elected judge. He's not an appointed judge.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And no. I think he's appointed. He's an appointed judge. I'm not
by
sure
by the state or by the feds. By the state or the feds?
I think the state.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So whatever it was, he's was
sort of appeals court. That'd be sort of like appeals court or something like that.
But anyway, he's now 70 years old, has a lifetime of legal knowledge, and I was just thinking about he's getting itchy to do something. You know, he's kind of making noises like that. Like, hey, you really got to get some idea of, you know, like what something to do. You got anything I can do kind of thing, you know? And I just think like, wow, what a, we have now a, you know, this, the benefit of people like that who have, you know, 50 years of work experience or real world
knowledge,
accumulation of knowledge that are, and the, there's no physical, you know, now somebody like that, you could,
they're accessible. They're accessible.
Yes, exactly.
Their skills are accessible. Yeah.
Their skills are accessible. And I think that is a wonderful, resource to kind of
Funny. Joe at one of Joe College at one of his genius networks about maybe 4 years ago had as a guest Sandra Day O'Connor, who was the first woman Supreme Court justice, and it was interesting because she lives, you know, right in Paradise Valley in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And she dropped down and Joe interviewed her for about 2 hours. And you know, I think she was late 70s, maybe early 80, maybe 80. And really, really present. And apparently, she's taken a turn for the worse since then, but the day she was there, she was really, I mean, she was sharp as a tack. And, but she was saying that she continually made trips around the country to sit in on cases. And this was a great thrill to the judges and lawyers, you know, that she would come in and she would sit down. I mean, she had no influence on the case at all, but she would just, you know, particular issues, you know, and she would choose them, and then she would make a request. Could she come and view the case and, or, you know, actually be present in the, But one of the things that suggests, one of the big problems is the clogged up legal system, you know, and part of it is travel. I mean, part of it is just the physical, you know, the... And I'm wondering how far off into the future before a certain number of trials actually take place by Zoom.
I've been thinking the same thing. That's what I was thinking about with Barry, my neighbor. You know, like what the access to what's available, you know, in terms of arbitration and things like you were literally, you could kind of put a layer between the legal system and... You said you could have things arbitrated with a real judge as a precursor to going to court for something. I think there's an amazing opportunity for that.
I mean, there's a certain type of lawyer who would hate it.
Right, of course.
Their whole skill is based on their physical ability to physically intimidate or... everything. And, really, I mean, you know, I mean, it's kind of like,
and also to to some extent, the relationships that they have built with the, you know, it's kind of a closed ecosystem way. And, you know, I mean, I got to see the camaraderie and stuff of these guys through, you know, seeing them at the country club and at different, you know, events that, you know, two guys who were, you know, opposite of each other in the courtroom that week that were on the golf course the following, you know, this weekend playing together and have a, you know, a history of being together since high school kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, the physical relationship equity of those things where I think you...
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was, just something I picked up early COVID, but there's this hospital system, and they're nationwide, and I think they're called Trinity or something like that. It's a Catholic Catholic hospitals, and I think it's 56 Catholic hospitals. And what they have is a virtual network of 10,000 doctors.
Yes.
And the doctors go 24/7, you know. And of course, it's been COVID's been a remarkable breakthrough for doctors, because up until COVID, doctors didn't get paid for telemedicine.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get paid, and it was the insurance companies that were the biggest obstacles to it,
right?
Because the insurance companies wants to slow down treatment; they don't want to speed up treatment. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Because if you know, if it speeds up treatment, that means that people are actually paying for the insurance, are actually using the insurance for, you know, well, you know, what kind of world is it where people actually use the thing that they paid for? I mean, answer that question for me, Dean, you know, that you would actually use the thing that you paid for. You know?
Imagine. Yeah.
Imagine. I mean, that's shocking.
Yeah, that's something.
Okay. I mean, so anyway, but they've done that, and they did it just for healthcare. They just did it to give care to their patients. You know, mm-hmm. that doctors would be available to talk to them and everything like that. But I bet they're being rewarded 10 times over now for having created that system.
Mm-hmm.
See, they were totally prepared for this, and they weren't even charging for it. Now they get to charge for it, you know. So
yeah, and it's just so much better. I mean, it's a really it's an interesting thing, you know. This whole the relationship.
Yeah, you know, it's like Jeff Gladden. For 3 or 4 years, we've gone to Dallas for that, you know, and I just don't want to go there. I just, you know.
Why would you? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, go there, and then we have to go to his office and everything. I said, and, you know, and the main reason we're going there is to have our blood, you know, having our blood taken. And I said, figure out some way that we can have our blood taken and shipped to us and shipped to you. And
This is what, so I have my primary doctor. I have a concierge doctor who is, you have, you know, a relationship with that. You have his cell phone, and he comes to my house, and, you know, longer appointments or whatever you need kind of thing. And, you know, he'd been coming to my home, and, you know, now we meet by, Zoom or talk on the phone.
Yep.
He's got a blood, lab, so he's got a blood a phlebotomist on his team who comes and does the blood right in my house. Will come.
Yeah.
I sit right in the chair I'm sitting in right now. He takes the blood.
Do you have a blood room?
I have a blood room / podcast / evil scheming room. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I'm sitting in my comfy chair.
The global domination center, yes.
Oh, yeah, which is right down the hall from my Zoom jet where I transport all over the world. But anyway, he comes and takes my blood right there. So I don't have to go anywhere. And it's great. And now to Zoom with him is perfect, because unless he's got to once a year do our fun digital rectal exam. You can't do that over Zoom. And so, you know, now we've only got that to look forward to every year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But everything else we can do by Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think probably there'll be, like blood drop. You do a blood drop test, and there's a little digital thing that you stick your finger in. You know, you prick your finger, and you draw blood and the thing, and then it gets, you know, in the little digital sensor that everything that's important gets picked up and it's sent electronically. And,
yes.
You know, it gets analyzed. Well, that was, you know, that was, what's her name, Elizabeth Holmes, except she was crooked, but that was the breakthrough that she was promising, you know.
With Thanos,
What was the name?
Theranos.
And she's still, you know, I mean, the trial still isn't good, but, you know, I've seen her, and I said, put her away for, you know, put her away for 25 years, you know. Everything like that. But she was the ultimate. I mean, I've seen con people, you know, but she was the ultimate con person. She even altered herself for the role. She had kind of a squeaky voice, and she practiced for years of having this really deep resonant voice.
Right.
She dressed like Jeff, you know, like
Steve Jobs. Yeah.
Yeah. And everything like that. But she's a total, she has zero remorse. I mean, she has zero remorse, right? So she's just got, you know,
right.
She's got chips missing. But she took in, she had Henry Kissinger was on her board. And, I mean, she had all, I think, Madeleine Albright. She had former secretaries of state. And they didn't know a clue about what she actually did, you know.
Well, I think part of that was her, you know, what Peter would call the super credibility line or whatever. Her pedigree was really what kind of gave her that advantage. Her grandfather
Didn't she go to Stanford? And she dropped out of Stanford. I mean, that's the thing. You go to the most expensive college you can find and then drop out, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you get the benefit of being there without the full cost.
But you also get the what a power move too. It's almost like you get the thing, like Mark Zuckerberg is a Harvard dropout. Bill Gates is a Harvard dropout. You know, so it's like you go there, like these athletes that go play in college and do 1 year and go to the NBA or whatever, right? The one and done. Kind of thing. It's actually true. You get the.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that's going to come out of that. With the college athletics are all going to go professional. They'll all get paid to go in college.
Yeah.
And the entire, you know, amateur claim for college athletics is going to go away. You know, they'll get paid. They'll get paid for being there, and they'll have a share of the, you know, the box office. They'll have a share of the TV and everything like that, you know.
It's really interesting to me when you look at the role of college athletics. Is if you look at the highest paid government employees or government employees, on the top of the lists are college football coaches.
Yeah.
Higher than, like, I mean, millions of dollars compared to any of the chief justices, justices.
They'd be like servants and bellmen, you know, in the college football. You know, I had an agent in the program, Jimmy Sexton, and he's considered one of probably top five sports agents in the United States right now. Really great guy.
Yeah.
Really great guy. He had NBA, NFL, I think it was mainly NFL players and National Basketball Association players. Now he's just got college coaches.
Uh-huh.
And college coaches are the mother load. And the reason is because athletes, you know, risky business, because, you know, they might get injured, they might go to jail and everything. College coaches, you get them at the right time, you have them for 25, 30 years, you know.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Ohio State, so I, you know, grew up in Ohio, and the Big Ten, which is the Big Ten and an extra four. So they actually have 14.
Yeah,
they
right.
Called off, they called off their college football season.
Okay. Yeah.
So here, I'll put the economics in perspective here. The profits from the college football season pays for every other sport that college has. And they have 75 or 80 other sports. Every one of them gets paid for by the profits that are made on the college football. So you wipe that out. How are they paying for all those other sports this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing, right?
That tells you that when the president of the university calls the college football coach, he said, sir.
Aha, that's right. Oh, that's funny. Yes.
He said,
and
sir, do you have some time on your schedule for me right now?
I love it.
Yeah, but you know, these things went along. They're going to go on forever, and then there's this real juncture. I think Roland Fraser had the greatest line. I really enjoyed him. I really enjoyed him, and he said, "Let me describe the world right now. Everything in the world is for sale."
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In other words, it has either gone way down in value, so it's a good deal, or it's going to go really up in value, and that's a good deal.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's... especially true of things that are Cloudlandia enabled, you know, that are rooted in Cloudlandia.
That's a special category for our ongoing podcast.
Uh-huh.
Cloudlandia enabled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, I'm really having an amazing time just kind of really doing the exploration here. Under this context that I think we're really we're cartographers of a new territory.
Yeah. What would it be like? Well, it'd be, you know, that's why I like thinking in terms of transportation systems. Peter Zion says one of the greatest the greatest breakthroughs, and it's not given enough credit, is deep water navigation.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, that you didn't have to stay within the sight of land. Longitude was the difficult one. So they figured out, you know, how to figure out longitude. They already knew how latitude was figured out. That was that was easy, but longitude was the big one. So they could know exactly where they were. And, it was a whole bunch of, rule of thumb and various other things. And then they developed the technology to actually coordinate they had chronometers, which were actually ticking watches, and it was set to Greenwich time, and then they had hourglass, put the sand over and the sand goes down into the bottom, and then
hourglass,
and then they had sextants that could actually figure out the relationship of the sun. And they put them all together. I'm reading this great series called the Master and Commander series by Patrick O'Brien. It's 20 novels about a ship's captain during the Napoleonic War. And it's very, very interesting how they figured out within seconds of where they were time-wise when there's nothing but water around, and how much that made a difference. It changed the world. Well, Peter Zion says that all international trade is 90% water dependent. 90%
still.
And
yeah.
Oh, well, still, yeah, yeah.
Of the moving of physical goods, right?
Because cheap, very, very cheap. It's 1/12 the cost of any other form of transportation. The closest to it, it's 1/12. It was just really, really cheap. And he said the big thing was that it's only available if the U.S. Navy guarantees safety for all that shipping, and if the U.S. Navy only does it for part of the shipping, then the rest of the shipping won't be valuable. Yeah.
That's one of the things. I hadn't thought about that one in particular, but that's under this category that I've been observing of how much of the foundation has been laid to get to this point. You know, like when we talk about music and books, and I mean, if you take books, for example, the progression of the foundation that had to be laid to get to this point, starting with language itself, mm-hmm. developing mm-hmm. language and words that everybody kind of agreed on and understood, which then, that allows things, but then the distribution of the ideas with the printing press mm-hmm. and all of that stuff to get to the point now where the words can be, you can get your words to anybody in the world. You know, you think about the geography thing that you were just describing, the navigation, that we're at a point right now where, 500 years ago, it was breaking news that the world was round, and now we're in a situation where I can give you a series of numbers that pinpoint my precise location on the planet.
Yeah.
What is that called? GPS? Global positioning system. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How old is GPS?
I think probably 70s, probably 70s. Because you had to have satellites.
Yeah.
So they had to have enough satellite coverage.
What's the pixel level of that? Like, how precise is my location? Is it to a foot, an inch, a less than an inch? What?
Yeah, probably be down to that level. Yeah.
So
it's different in different parts of the world. I mean, you would be obviously where you are, but in Antarctica, it wouldn't be as precise. Yeah.
Okay.
Nor are there that many people requiring it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. So, but you look at it that we're at a precision level that my GPS coordinates in my reading room where I am now compared to in my living room is a completely even different thing. That level of precision of our locations. Wow. And you think about that now, that allows... That's the backbone of all of these things. Like, I get a kick out of watching. We do Grubhub deliveries or Instacart, and now they're all enabled where you can actually watch the progression of the vehicle, the delivery coming on your phone. You can see exactly where they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting how Uber was always off. I always found that Uber was never, you had to go out on the street and you had to hail them. I always said, it surprised me that their system wasn't more precise, that they, they should be able to knock on the door, everything like that. So, I don't know. I mean, the GPS was created and is maintained by the United States. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that.
And then the Chinese want to create their own, and the Russians want to create their own. And one of the big things is satellite wars, you know, in the future. And what was it that Peter Zeihan said? He says, not well known, because neither country wants it to be known. But about 7-8 years ago, the Chinese destroyed a U.S. military satellite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did it with a rocket. They did it with a rocket. They actually knocked out. And 5 days later, 7 Chinese military satellites disappeared.
Wow.
And the U.S. said, hope you learned the right lesson from this.
Wow, yeah. Well,
you know, I mean, that's why I say that outer space is not going to be a repeat of the United Nations.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Space Force. Ta-da! Well, Elon's going to be right there. I think he's really bet wisely on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. All righty. Well,
it's always fun, Dan.
I am off for 3 weeks. You will not hear me because I'm going to cottages for 2 weekends in a row. This is summer short up here.
Well, good for you. Get it all in.
Yep. Summer short here.
All right. Well, I will look for you when you're back. I'll meet you right here.
Yep. Good.
Bye.
Bye.